Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all you need. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is an awesome Wednesday night here in Lexington, Kentucky, ready for episode 284. Joining me tonight are the amazing Holly Phillippe and the one from parts unknown in Tennessee, Daniel Dark. Welcome to my co-host. How are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
There he is. There's the dark one. And Holly, she's somewhere out
looking
there.
Looking for Holly to get excited now.
Well, we're going to crank it up here. We're going to do our best to crank it up and get the energy flowing tonight. And we've got a great guest for that and coming up here in just a few minutes. And definitely want to check in and see what everybody's been up to. The chat room is open and working. And we have, of course, the awesome RG Westerman is the first in the chat room tonight, followed by Amy McCorkle. Shout out to Amy. I understand from a post today that Amy got a green light on a project for Netflix. So congratulations, Amy. That
Congrats.
Is awesome, awesome news. And definitely got a lot of notifications on that thread. Yeah, people seem to be really, really excited about that. And definitely I'll have to have you on the show soon to discuss that more in detail. So that's that was breaking news today. So yeah, that's
well,
awesome.
We know what
that's
type
awesome.
Of project is here.
I don't know.
The post was it was a very short post that said I can't remember the exact wording of it. Hold on, I just said that moment when your project is given the green light by Netflix.
The green.
Yeah, and that was. And that was it. That was the post. So well, hopefully we'll get some
detail
from Amy on that.
She probably can't say too much about it right now. You know?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Said that she is signing with a new manager too. So a lot going on.
Yeah, because to get into Netflix now, you have to have like an agent or manager on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back in the old days,
you
used to be able just to write Netflix and say, "Hey, I got this idea," blah 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 blah. But now they are flooded with so much that you actually have to have somebody to go to them on your behalf. So it's a little different.
Yep. Yep. And definitely have to have Amy to talk about this more in detail as soon as she is able to, but that is awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, she said
on
in the chat that she can't say too much, you know, right now, but to have her back on, she could talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting though. A greenlit project at Netflix, and definitely go forward and do great things. Continue on your road, Amy. That's awesome, awesome stuff. And Sandy Lender just joined in the chat room, and so I think she's getting up to speed on the good news here. And yeah, that is fantastic. I mean, that is always awesome when somebody in our circle,
one in the group,
you know, makes
yeah.
a breakthrough. You know, definitely Amy's near and dear to us, and has been to many Imaginariums and featured our film festival, got awards. See somebody in our family taking a big, big step. That's awesome. So, yeah,
that's,
definitely.
That's a huge step. That's not a big step. That's a huge step.
That's
to,
true.
That is a huge
right.
step, yeah.
That will not only launch what, you know, a movie or series or whatever, but also launch the books and launch her appearances and launch everything for her.
Yep. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because, boy, it sure sells books, too. You get a series off of a book series,
yep.
And, man, oh, man, watch those sales go through the roof.
Yeah, it's a motor. It's a motor. And so, yeah, congratulations on that, Amy. And then we also want to mention, too, continue to follow the campaign for Through the Tempest Black. That is the anthology that is spearheaded by editor Nathan Day. R.G. Westerman has a story in it, and also many others that you may recognize from the Star Chamber show, like Rob Hoff and the great Michael Nost and many more. So definitely you have not gotten aboard that campaign on Indiegogo, please do. They're going to be, I think a few more weeks left in that campaign, and it's motoring, and I see posts for it going out all the time. We want to definitely give that a big shout out and remind you to go support that if you haven't already. Through the Tempest Black anthology project on Indiegogo from editor Nathan Day. And yeah, definitely if you follow RG Westerman, you'll see her posts about it. You'll see, or Rob Hoff or Michael Nost or any of the other authors, Michael David Anderson, I mean, Drew Graber, Casey Miracle. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Yeah, there's a lot of good folks on that project. So check it out. So yeah, that's another one
and
I definitely give a plug for.
And we have another exciting project that just launched its Indiegogo that me and Steven, RG, is all a part of.
Yeah.
And that's with our good buddy, old pal. I'm sure you, quite a few of you know him, Silvio Wolf Bush. Check it out.
Yep.
Indiegogo, Blood and Creed. It's a story it's going to tell about Lancelot and Morgana after the round table years, a story that's not told too much. And it's going to give the spotlight to some great veterans. There is a whole cast of veterans that's going to be a part of this. And it's just going to be phenomenal. They get their moment to shine. Mm-hmm. And there's some exciting stuff. Silvio's wrote a whole write-up about it, a whole article on the Indiegogo page. Just look, go to Indiegogo, look for Blood and Creed, and you could see, pictures behind the scene. Matthew Smith, good
the
friend
Appalachian
of ours,
Ghost.
The Appalachian Ghost himself. Productions is a part of this, and he come up with a fantastic trailer. It's really cool on there. And I've been sharing. You can go to my wall and find it. I also have a TikTok that I've shared about it. But, on Instagram, too, I've shared about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, please check it out and support the Lexington, Louisville film community. We're getting a lot of Lexingtonians in on this one, which is exciting because Louisville's up and coming, and there's a lot of great filmmakers here in Lexington that me and Steven have been introduced to and found out about through doing the monthly meetings that we were doing, which if we ever get over the COVID situation, we can get those resumed for the International Screenwriting Association Third Thursday's events. But yeah, we need to look into possibly being able to do those in the next few months.
Set up right, and Silvio is a fantastic director, fantastic actor, and he's going to be having both of those talents on display in this project of his. And definitely glad to have a small role myself, not as an actor, don't worry, but helping Silvio out a few things on the project. So I'm really looking forward to that, check it out again, Blood and Creed, and that's also on Indiegogo. So yeah, we got some cool news.
We do. And then RG is going to go to bed. She's one of our co-hosts, and she's going to go to bed early tonight, so said she's not on. And she just wanted to say in the chat room that this Friday, the 1st, at the Henry County Public Library in Eminence, Kentucky, she'll be doing a reading at 6 p.m. So that's at the Henry County Public Library in Eminence, Kentucky at 6 p.m. R.G. Westerman will be doing a book reading.
So a good chance to go hang out with R.G.
All kinds of cool stuff going on, guys.
And so you all can find out just how cool RG is as we know her. So, yeah, go out and support that in Eminence, Kentucky, Friday the 1st at 6 p.m. And so, yeah, we got a lot of little announcements today. This is fantastic. It's good, good. Excitement. And, yeah, she said she will be have some books for sale as well. And let's see. Oh, well, look at this. Yeah, and Clayton Barnett, rolling with the announcements. We'll get this in real quick. Featured local author at the Licking County Book Fair. Love it. Licking County Book Fair on the 16th of October. So that would be in Ohio. So, yes, Clayton, I remember now. You are in Ohio. I'm not I'm getting that correct now. But the Licking County Book Fair on the 16th of October. So, yeah, our group is very active tonight. Lots of announcements. This is awesome.
Yay!
So, yeah, celebrate. So it's well, we better get in a couple of spotlights for our awesome sponsors. And tonight, yes, we have the amazing Sandy Lender as one sponsor, and then also Per Bostet Publications. So so first up, I will go ahead and give you a little bit about Per Bostet, and then we'll come on over to Sandy's new spot. And please do pay attention to it, because Sandy has a new release that is very timely, and you definitely want to pick up a copy. But here we go for Per Bostet. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. Explore post-World War II England with 11-year-old Sylvie and Edelweiss for Elizabeth, the sequel to Andrea Gilbey's Bottle Tops for Battleships. Or dive into the thrilling world of Karma and Crime, a new supernatural mystery by J. Paul Burroughs. You can find these titles and more at perbostetpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events. Per Bostet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Shout out to T. Lee Harris, Sarah Marion, and Marion Allen, our great trifecta of writing talent there. And so thank you very much to Per Bostet. And now I'll give you a little bit about Sandy. And pay attention to this one, because you want a copy of what she's talking about in this.
Tell an artist in your life you support and believe in them. Author Sandy Lender makes that easy with her latest release, 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer. This workbook is a journal, creative resource, and tool of inspiration all rolled up in one, with 365 prompts and suggestions to stoke the creative brain. Grab it from Amazon in time for holiday gift giving. That's 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer by Sandy Lender.
Thank you very much for that, Sandy. And yes, stoke your creative brain with Sandy's new release. Fantastic. And definitely, I've been a little tardy in getting my own copy, but I am getting a copy. I am definitely picking up a copy myself. And yeah, I've just been immersed in editing. Yes, Clayton, I'm working on editing constantly, my friend. So don't worry. Yeah. Yours will also be finished in time. Don't worry. So, all right, back to y'all. But, yeah, definitely a thanks to our sponsors for this week's show as we get ready for our guest of the evening. But so, Holly, how are you?
Well, I always come home with, you know, from Indiana with the funk. And my grandkids were both sick. And I thought, man, I'm going to dodge the bullet this time. I was doing well, just had a little runny nose, some congestion, all this stuff. Well, today I felt like poop, and I have been in bed for most of the day and slept. So I do feel a little better now. I think my body, that's what it needed, was just to rest and, you know, yeah, try to beat this. But, yeah, I'm a busy, busy, busy person. So, I've got to force myself to get up, get going again. So yeah. I apologize to everybody that if I haven't answered your messages on time or emails or whatever, but – yeah, it's always a joy going to Indiana and coming back. I was in Indiana all last week.
Oh, yeah.
And oh my God, literally, you know, the whole thing about, you know, I had to put my dad in a nursing facility a couple of months ago and try to deal with insurance, you know, and all. Mom's 86 years old. So obviously, she has a daughter due list 10 miles long because I am the only child now. Both my brothers are passed. So I have to go up there, and I ended up trimming bushes and weed whacking and, you know, have to run to lawyer's appointments. And then we had a good friend that their boy got killed up there on an ATV, and we had a funeral. So, yeah, it was just a hellish week. But I did get to take the grandkids and my daughter, Diana, to the pumpkin show up there in Versailles, Indiana. That was fun because the three-year-old Lilith, that was her first year of riding rides. So she got on rides with Raven, and they had the best time. It was so cute. And the baby, Juniper, just sit in her little walker. She didn't care. She didn't say a word the whole time. I gave her some cotton candy, though. She was pretty sticky, but, yeah, that was a good time. But it always tuckers me out, and then I have to recoup a few days. Yes, Clay. Yes, lots of fluids and antioxidants. You are well. I don't know about the last one, but I do take extra zinc, vitamin C, echinacea. That's my trifecta, and then my holy trinity, as I call it. And then I add elderberry, which I was eating elderberry like crazy last weekend. Was at mom's because grandkids were, you know, little germ factories. So I'm like shoving the elderberry down. Yeah, but definitely zinc and extra vitamin D too is good. But yeah, C and all that good stuff.
But you got ready just in time for our guest who is now on deck. So I am going to proceed straight to the introduction, and we're going to bring in an awesome guest who is making his first appearance on the Star Chamber show. And this is one of those guests that's multifaceted. Yes, an award winner who has done a lot of different kinds of writing, who's written sketch comedy, stage plays, TV programs, fiction, nonfiction, children's stories, written, directed short films, and this is cool, as also the author of several wrestling histories and biographies. So with all of that on the table, we bring in for the very first time on the Star Chamber show, John Cosper. And John, your microphone should be on as we speak. Welcome.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we wouldn't miss it. And, yeah, as Holly said, she recovered just in time, health-wise, to be ready for you tonight. So.
I got to pep up, man, because I was a moaning and a groaning all day. I was like, I gotta get better. I got to do the podcast. And then right before we got on, I told Steve, I'm going to jump the shot real quick. So that seemed to help.
Yep. So we
spicy
take
food. It's a good spicy chicken sandwich. It'll clear me up. So, and I'm all snotty. So.
Well, let me tell you. I got this new air fryer. Do you have an air fryer?
Oh, I do, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, those are fun.
It makes the best chicken wings. I have not made chicken wings any other way since I got it. It's, use it for all kinds of things. So, yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
Yeah, she's going to be on that buzz for a while, John, because she's been wanting this legendary air fryer for like the last couple of years, and finally got her hands on it a couple last weekend, and let's just say that she's put it to work already quite a bit. We made the best fried pickles I've had. It is great. but let's get on to your world, and it is this is a show about, you know, we're talking about writing, creative writing. You about cover it all. I mean, you cover stage plays, screenplays, sketch comedy, I mean, fiction, you know, nonfiction. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So, and I know tonight we're going to be talking about some of your fiction and then getting into some of the rest of it. But, go ahead and tell us about some of your works that are available right now that folks can get into, because that's definitely something I want to make sure we emphasize so people can pick up some of your books, some of the stuff that you're going to, because I know you're going to be appearing this weekend at the Fright Night Film Festival. That's in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And so, yeah, you're going to have some titles out and available. So tell us a little bit about what you got going as far as the fiction side, and we'll start to work from there.
Absolutely, yeah. I've done a lot of shows the last couple of years with wrestling. I've been to the Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa twice, and Cauliflower Alley Club in Vegas, and some different events and stuff. So this is really the first time in a while I've been out with some of my fiction stuff. I'll have the wrestling stuff on the table as well, and actually Madman Pondo, Deathmatch Hardcore Legend, will be with me on Sunday as well, signing his autobiography. But I'd say the two books that I'm really excited and really trying to push out there, one is a little bit older title. It's called The Big Bad Goodnights. And this is a short story compilation. I've always enjoyed fairy tales and doing kind of, you know, finding different twists and angles on them. And The Big Bad Goodnight is basically a compilation where it's fairy tales reimagined as a dark world of film noir. It kind of started with the original story, which kicks off the book, The Big Bad Goodnight. And to me, the big bad wolf has always been kind of the ultimate noir anti-hero. He's a guy who's down on his luck. He's looking for one last score so he can get out of town and get away and maybe have some sort of a, you know, peaceful life and everything. And you know, of course, things go south with the three little pigs. And you know, there's always the dangerous dames like. You know, Little Red Riding Hood and other characters and stuff mixed in. And I actually had it as part of a different short story compilation a number of years ago. And when I revised that, it kind of fell out of it because it didn't really fit in with everything else, which is more sci-fi. And over the years, just kind of started writing other different stories and everything and created this little compilation that just released a new edition. There's a new story in it. Had a wonderful illustrator from Indiana who contributed some illustrations to the inside of the book and a comic book artist named Amanda Rachel. I've worked with before, designed a new cover. You've got a fairy on the front. You're looking very much like the femme fatale, the dangerous dame and everything from the 1940s.
Nice.
So my favorite story in the book, the one I always point to and actually made a little teaser trailer with an actress friend of mine, Meredith Keller from down in Owensboro. The story is called The Girl with the Golden Locks. And it's basically, I tell people, it's the three bears meshed up with Cape Fear with Goldilocks in the Robert Mitchum role. So you have Goldilocks basically stalking three bears. It's one of my favorite stories that I've ever done. And the other one I just put out is called Dead Park Plaza. And this one is a compilation of kind of horror comedy stories. I describe it as like The Office meets Tales from the Dark Side. All these stories take place in the same four-story office building over a period of 30 years. And there's different kinds of creepy twists to each individual one of them. One of them was actually inspired. My father passed away in March, and literally a week or so before he went in the hospital, and he went very, very fast. He sent me a text one morning. He's like, "Hey, I had a dream, this crazy story," and he pitched me the idea. And, over the summer, I went back and revisited the idea and also went through my files and discovered I've got a number of other stories. And, you know, I've worked in office settings and I've worked in cubicles for a long time. And I don't want to say it's a direct reflection on the people or the places that I've worked, because I work with a lot of really good people, but there's certainly a lot of horror and a lot of humor that can come out of that office environment.
I think that's everywhere.
Yeah, you got a little bit of everything. There's some zombies. There's a little bit of cannibalism. There's one called it was a goofy lark that I had in the back of my mind. Based on, I never even read the book Lord of the Flies, but I know the basic premise of it. And it's just the idea: what if you had an office, and the boss kicks over in the morning, and the whole office goes tribal? So Lord of the Files was the title that I had in mind and everything. And so one day I said, well, what the heck? Let's just sit down and play around with it. And I found a way to kind of tie them all together. Again, they all take place in this one office building. And, I'm already kind of tooling around with a possible sequel for it. But I want to see if I can find an audience for it. And, you know, it's I've got a wonderful friend named Corey Dawson who runs know the name of his bookstore. He's got a bookstore in Rising Sun, Indiana. I want to say Paradox Books and Games, which is the most dangerous bookstore in the world, was their subtitle. And he's trying to get it reopened and everything. But Corey was a great sounding board for me, and it kind of pitched a lot of ideas off of him and kind of helped me to hone things and everything. And but I'm real excited about this one. I just think it's just a lot of fun. And for me, fiction is all about having fun. You know, I've been writing about pro wrestling, and I've kind of built a really nice following the last couple of years, and actually bringing in more money than I'm spending on it. So for me, the fiction is just kind of the fun. It's whatever I want to write and whatever kind of entertains me, and hopefully it'll find an audience.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Do what, Daniel?
Who are some of the pro wrestlers that you've done books on?
Let's see. I worked with Tracy's Mothers before he passed away on his autobiography. This past year, I also released one with Princess Victoria, who wrestled from about 80 to 84. She and Velvet McIntyre were the first women's tag team champions in WWF. Mm-hmm. I worked with Johnny mm-hmm. Candido on a book about Chris Candido. Some fans may know him as Skip from the Body Donnas back in the 90s. And we put his biography out earlier this year. I've done some biographies on some older wrestlers, the Black Panther Jim Mitchell, who was the first African-American superstar in wrestling, was originally from Louisville, the lady named Elvira Snodgrass, that was always a fascination of mine. I wrote her biography. I've written two books about Louisville wrestling history, one going all the way back to 1880, all the way up to the present day, and another one was more of a deep dive, 1935 to 1957, which was kind of the golden years of pro wrestling. And there's one promotion that ran every Tuesday night for 22 years. And then also, so the first, one of the first autobiographies I did was Dr. D. David Schultz, who is best known as the man who slapped John Stossel for saying, "I think it's fake," on 2020.
I remember that. I remember that.
Aired in 1985, but it took place on December 27, 1984. So, and, yeah, that was a fun one. We tried to get John Stossel to write something for the book or contribute something, and I was able to get a hold of one of his people, and yeah, of course it didn't go anywhere. And then a year or two ago, he appears on Dark Side of the Ring with David and totally plays the heel and everything and played it up, and you know, and the guy had it coming. I know, you know.
That's fun. I love wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's awesome.
From the chat room has a question, and he's saying, how did you get into all these businesses?
Oh, it's kind of – things led from one thing to another. It started my freshman year of college. I dropped out of acting class because I was getting a D. I'd done some theater in high school, and I had one of those professors that made it their business to weed people out who weren't serious about it. So I dropped out of acting class, and then a week and a half later, I'm in the youth pastor's office at church, and he tells me, hey, I'm going to put you in charge of the drama team for the youth group. And I ended up doing drama ministry for 24 years after that. So, and I was writing, started off writing a skit a week for the youth programs, and then we went to two programs a mm-hmm. week. I was writing two and three skits a week, created my own little catalog to sell to other youth pastors and to write for other churches. And I wrote thousands and thousands of five-minute skits and plays and things like that.
Wow.
At a certain point, I started dabbling around with fiction and then dabbling around with film. You know, once the tools were there on Mac computers to be able to edit movies and everything, and I got a hold of a camera and started making short films for myself, and just kind of for fun, but also to kind of advertise and promote what I was doing. Like I say, it was just kind of a progression. I actually spent 10 years writing children's ministry curriculum as well. It was a guy I'd written some drama for called me up one day and said, "You ever written a Sunday school curriculum?" I said, "No." He's like, "Well, you're gonna now." So just kind of
okay.
Yeah, the wrestling thing kind of came about. I'd had a gig with a Christian high school over here in Indiana, and was doing theater. Was actually their after school theater director for about 4.5 years, and finally realized that wasn't I'd gone back to school and got my teaching license, and realized that just wasn't going to work out for me. And I'd left that. I was doing the Sunday school curriculum. Was still writing some drama, but I was looking for something new and different to do. And a number of years ago, before I was married, I had a roommate for about 6 months. We moved in with his entire wrestling library. We're talking DVDs, VHS, and books. And that's when I read Mick Foley's Have a Nice Day, and that's when I read Bobby Heenan's book and Kurt Angle's and all these. And, developed a love for the history and the stories, of the business, which, really until Foley's book came out, had never really been very well cataloged. There have been some historians kind of tracking records, but nobody really doing books. And, it was I was at lunch one day with my wife, and I said, "I'm thinking about writing a book about the history of pro wrestling in Louisville. Nobody's done anything on Louisville. There's been, some stuff about Memphis, which Louisville was part of the territory, but there's a story there between that and OVW." And I'd also discovered some work that some other historians had done, like for example, Ed Strangler Lewis actually got his name in Louisville. That name was given to him by the promoter when he showed up 2 weeks late, and they'd had to put somebody else on under his real name 2 weeks before. And, to my surprise, my wife was like, "Yeah, go for it." My wife's not a wrestling fan, so I was like, "Really? Serious?" Like, "Yeah." I'm not sure she's so thrilled with it now, but for wrestling's been good to me. And it's been, you know, it's one of those things that some days I'm like, I can't believe what I do. You know, I can't believe who I'm talking to on the phone, or I can't believe who I'm, you know, getting an interview in person. And, you know, just the opportunities that I've had, and, you know, the way the fans have embraced me, and the way, you know, wrestlers have been willing to open up and share their stories. And it's just amazing. You know, it's a really cool thing that I get to do. And I certainly enjoy every moment of it.
Yeah, definitely. We actually have had wrestlers on the show here, and believe it or not, Imaginarium was actually had a sponsorship from Midwest Championship International Wrestling, and that's Star Bad Blood and those guys. So yeah, we've actually had a few ties into the wrestling world, not obviously as extensive as you, but I do think it's awesome. Yeah, and we definitely had fun talking to some of those guys about it. So, but yeah, but what were you going to say, Holly?
Some of the greatest entertainers in the world.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
Holly,
yeah,
you were about
they
to
are.
Say, sorry.
They are. Oh, I was going to say that. Have you always been like a wrestling fan, like when you was growing up? You know, watching the WWF, and then it turned to WWE, and it was WWE. Yeah, they kept changing it, but yeah, I mean, have you always been like, you know? Because I grew up with like Hulk Hogan, and there was Jake the Snake, and there was you know all them guys, and I loved it. I mean, I ate it up. You know, every weekend, I couldn't wait for wrestling.
Oh yeah, I remember the rock and wrestling era. I think it was, for me, it was probably Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper were the reasons I discovered it, because they had the whole cross going with her and also with Mr. T, and I was a big A-Team fan. I love Cyndi Lauper's music, and all of a sudden they're hanging out with wrestlers, and my buddies at school are talking about it. And I remember asking my dad, "Can I watch wrestling?" And you know, my dad was not a fan. My mom definitely was not a fan. My grandfather was. And I have a vague recollection in the back of my head seeing Hulk Hogan before he was Hulk Hogan on Florida Championship Wrestling, or Championship
Hollywood.
Wrestling from Florida.
He went
to
Hollywood. Mm-hmm.
Way back. We're probably talking 82, 83, somewhere in there. But I remember watching Superstar for the first time on a Saturday morning, and seeing Randy Savage make his entrance with that sequined robe and Miss Elizabeth. And my dad going, "Isn't this ridiculous?" And I'm like, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. This is so fun." I watched it off and on for years. It would get banned in the house when my brother and I would use moves on each other. And I remember watching World Class Championship Wrestling on ESPN, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, and Single the Third, the Dingo Warrior. Oh gosh, I love that stuff. I just love the Von Erichs. So, and of course, you know, kind of in and out. I missed most of the Attitude Era, to be honest, but I'd broken up with a fiance, and you know, was doing everything that was the antithesis of what she liked. She liked things like classical music and fine things and whatever. So I was like, all right, you know what? I'm getting a wrestling pay per view. And got hooked into it, and been watching it ever since. I guess I owe her thanks, but you know, it was what was it? No Way Out 2001, and still one of my favorite matches I ever saw: Triple H and Stone Cold, Three Stages of Hell. That's still one of my favorite matches. So one of my favorite televised matches. And I always tell people, like, what's the best match you ever saw live? I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Madman Pondo was running an all-girls show in the middle of a fan fest, and everybody's ignoring the girls. You know, we're in this giant arena, and everybody's over in the corner getting autographs from all the legends, and they're ignoring the girls. So here comes Mickey Knuckles, Dementia DeRose, Amazing Maria, and Samantha Heights out to the ring. Mickey picks up the microphone. "How's everybody doing?" Nobody responds. "Anybody want to see some more girl fight?" Nobody responds. "This match is false count anywhere, no disqualifications." They fought for about 2 minutes in the ring. They fought all the way up the aisle. They fought all the way around the fan fest. Then about 10 minutes, they got a crowd of about 50 people around them. Sugar Dunkerton's right up front. He's streaming the whole thing on whatever social media platform. The girls are just beating the crap out of each other. One of them gets suplexed up the bleacher steps. Two of them get thrown in garbage cans. The Army recruiters are there, clear off their table. They're like, "Put them through our table." They're like, "Is it your table?" They said, "Yeah." It wasn't their table, so thankfully the table didn't break. But I mean, and it was wild enough and crazy enough. Some guy actually had the gall to go to the promoter and say, "I want my money back. My girlfriend and I don't feel safe."
Oh,
please!
So,
oh, wow!
I'm telling you, it was
laughing to Tom, put your big boy panties on and, you know, grow up.
Yeah. Well, watching them just grab the crowd by the throat and making them pay attention and saying, you're going to watch us and you're going to remember us. And they certainly did. It was just fun.
That is awesome.
Girls after my own heart.
Yeah, that sounds like a Holly type, for sure.
So, I'd probably yeah. took that guy and pow, put him through a table.
Yeah, exactly. on last week's show, I think we were talking about, Holly actually beat a guy at arm wrestling at American Legion Hall in Indiana. So, yeah, Holly's ready to go. He never...
Yeah. I took the commander on, too. I told him he was going with me, but... He wasn't trying anyway, so I said, okay, let's go. And then we first started, I told my own, I said, you going to start? When we starting? I'm looking at my other hand. I'm like, when we starting? Anytime now, you know. And his wife sitting at the bar to the side laughing. But he did beat me. The commander did beat me.
I did just for fun. I looked up when we did that one wrestling interview that we had on the Star Chamber show. It was 192 is the episode number, and Bobo Brazil Jr. Featured with our Bad Blood. Yeah, and a lot of people I know were big fans of Bobo, so that was a cool show. So yeah, I just want to make sure we get our street cred with John here. John knows. Yes, we have wrestlers on.
We're definitely going to try to. We're going to try to get them to Imaginarium because COVID hit and everything went cuckoo, and they didn't get to come. And then there was still stuff going on this year, so I'm hoping they could come because I was like, man, if you could just do a, if they could set up a little ring and do a little match, have some match, I think that would be. Fantastic. I'm
something
all
fun.
For it, you
something
know. So,
yeah,
get with me. If you know anybody that's interested in like coming out and doing it, I think that'd be awesome.
That would be cool. I remember going to one a couple years ago where they did some like cosplay wrestling. They had the wrestlers dressed in the superheroes and stuff. And
that'd be cool.
Sounds a little odd, but there's a group out of Ohio. It's one of my favorite. If you like the old stuff, they call themselves Old Wrestling, OLDE.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of create a early 1900s atmosphere with the look of the wrestlers, with the character names. I mean, we're talking, the handlebar mustaches, the beards, the top,
nice.
The suspenders.
Daniel!
I mean, just the whole
thing.
Daniel, look them
people.
Up on Facebook, their last show. I mean, it's just the coolest,
oh my
coolest
God.
Stuff. I love what they do.
Man, Daniel would love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's getting into our time.
Yeah.
Daniel's 200 and some years old. I died and come back, but Daniel's still alive. So
this lady who wrestles out of Indianapolis named Thunder Kitty, she's 100. That's her gimmick.
Well,
she's 100 years old. She
hey.
Was wrestling with Mildred Burke and Mae Young. You would love her. I mean,
that's awesome.
She's great, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to get with you. Yeah, I would love to have them out and do a match like that. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
You may have found your people, Daniel.
In touch with, Marion Fontaine is the guy in charge. I would be happy to put you in touch with them.
That would be fun.
It's family friendly. It's fun. It's entertaining.
Awesome.
And, I mean, it's just such a kick. I mean, what they do is really, really neat.
Oh,
that
gosh,
is awesome.
I think it'd be fascinating. Yeah, I'll definitely get with you because, I mean, I've still got, quite a few months to go and I could get something figured out here. That would be really neat.
Certainly. Yep.
And I definitely got to get you out. You got to come see us at Imaginarium, man.
People
would love you.
I'll be honest with you. One of the things I think is really cool that you guys have done in the past is opening up the, the vendor room and whatever to people that didn't buy a ticket. I've actually come in and walked through that. It's a great opportunity because, somebody who didn't buy a ticket to the and can't go to the special things, they can still get in there and discover the artists, discover the authors and stuff like that. And I really love that you guys have done that.
It's
definitely on my list of things that I want to do. So.
I'll say we did that in the past, but this year, because the cost of everything has shifted, and our new venue,
that's true.
Our new venue is huge,
it's a nice venue.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful, and the way it's set up and everything, and we have so many different things going on with the film festival, with Game Hall, with the Vendor Hall Expo.
Stuff,
we have, so much entertainment, the panels and workshops that we do charge, we have to charge everybody now because we've grown into a bigger convention. But I mean, it's phenomenal.
Otherwise,
there's something for everybody. You know, there is literally something for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the good, but don't worry, it centers around the writing and the storytelling.
Yep.
That's the epicenter, that's what the theme is, and and so and actually I do want to ask you a writing a question, because we don't often get to talk to somebody that has written both screenplays and stage plays. From your perspective in writing both, what do you find different about a stage play versus writing a screenplay, and what are pros and cons of both in your own experience between those two mediums? Because a lot of people kind of just assume it's, you know, a similar thing, but and there is a relationship, but there are differences. So I'm curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, they're two totally completely different animals. I mean, it's different as writing script is from writing prose. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of started out with theater and everything, and doing stuff on stage, so that definitely came much more natural to me. And stage is a lot more verbal. There might be monologues, there might be different things and stuff. Or film, you're writing something visual, and trying to create that visual picture in the mind of the person who's going to read it, whether that be the person who's vetting your script, whether that be the person who's directing or the actors or something like that. Stage is about telling, and screen is more about showing and everything. And, you know, I think I was much more master of stage. I did so much more stage than obviously I was much, you know, more masterful at that than I was with film. I was lucky enough to get one feature film produced. It was a mockumentary called Wingman about a superhero sidekick who gets let go and is trying to find his place in the world and trying to find a new job, and which turned out to be kind of fun. Got a really, really nice screening here in Louisville and stuff, and did a lot of short films. And I'll say the thing that I enjoy the most about film too, and something, you know, that you have to know going in when you're doing screenwriting is, you know, you as a screenwriter, you're basically just laying down just the bare bones of what it's going to be. And ideally it gets turned over to somebody who's a director, who's got a vision, and they're going to bring their own spin to it. And then the actors, once they get it into their hands, are going to, you know, bring that out as well. And the thing I enjoyed most about back then when I was doing all that stuff was just that collaboration with the actors. And I enjoyed that on stage as well too. You know, if I was doing my stuff, you know, we were fast and loose. Somebody had a better line than I did, I was like, oh, throw that in. You know, if somebody had a better idea for business or something like that. And you know, a lot of what I did too was comedy, which lends itself more to that type collaboration. And you know, the more eyeballs you have on something, and the more creative minds you have working on it, then you know, the more people are going to see funnier things and funnier lines than you ever envisioned. So,
right,
you know, that's the thing that I think I miss the most too about doing theater, about doing film. I don't miss the headaches of trying to get everybody together to do it, but anyway, I got off track from your question, but yeah, I think, you know, the real difference is with screenplays, you're trying to create that visual picture versus, you know, where everything's much more tell on stage. It's much more about show on screen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we do not often get a chance to talk to somebody that's both a playwright and a screenwriter, so I had to make sure we got that question in there.
Uh-huh.
And nor is it every day we talk to somebody that worked as Paul Rudd's stand-in, because I saw that in your write-up, and I was like, cool.
If you read the whole thing, it's like, I could tell you stories about this. None of them would be true. I was told.
Oh, none of them would be true. Okay. I might have missed that.
True. No, 100% not true. No. I was
okay.
It was just me having some fun.
I just kind of jumped out at me while I was going over notes about you, and I was like, wow, he did that. God, this guy does everything, literally. I mean, is there anything he doesn't do?
I wish I was. I got compared to him back then. You know, I think we'd all love to age like Paul Rudd has. My gosh. So,
because it seems like the only thing on your credit list that wasn't there is like a haiku book collection. I think that's maybe about the only thing I didn't see.
I don't do poetry, and I definitely don't do songwriting. I learned that limitation a long time ago. So,
but yeah, it's it's pretty awesome, your list of adventures and credits in your writing path. I mean, it's a you had a page on your site that had like a year by year kind of overview of all your stuff. And then I do, yeah, people should check that out. It's your name. It's johncosper.com, and John with an H, J-O-H-N, johncosper.com. But yeah, that is a cool little timeline thing that you had on your site. And I really enjoyed reading over that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Seth Godin had done something like that, and I was like, yeah, I should lay something like that out. The trick now is keeping it updated year after year. So,
we'll
see how it goes.
I know, with everything we all have on our plates, yeah, it's hard to keep everything updated. But
exactly, it's funny because I talked about I had that children's ministry was doing that for 10 years and actually stepped away from it earlier this summer. It was like, I was just overwhelmed and, trying to keep that going, trying to keep something else going. I was like, I'm making enough with the wrestling. It's time to go ahead and step out. And I've been feeling for a while, it's been time to step away from that. I was like, great. Now I can just sit and I can just focus on one thing, and 2 days later, I'm working on a horror story compilation.
Life of a creative.
You just go where the inspiration takes you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to sometimes. Because I went. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just went through a period in the early 2010s where just due to some passings in my family, I got a bit of a block on a couple series of mine, and it opened up the door for one of the things that's been one of my more successful franchises, and that kind of gave me a clean slate to get into until I felt good about retackling those series. So yeah, you do go where the muse takes you, and that is a way to avoid stagnation for sure. Yeah, definitely, if you run into blocks and stuff, you go where the open door is as far as the inspiration. But yeah, you've got a lot of options. Definitely.
And it's nice to be able to sit and focus on something, but if you get blocked on that one thing, there's nowhere to go. And when you're open to having different unfinished projects sitting on your desktop and everything like that, it's funny, while you're procrastinating on one thing, you'll all of a sudden figure out, oh hey, go back to to doing another. So you've got someplace else to go and have that creative outlet, and then your subconscious is solving whatever problem it was you had on the other one while you're distracted.
What age is your children's book?
Go ahead, Daniel.
What age group is your children's books?
I've got two children's books that are on Amazon. We're talking preschool to elementary school. One is a collection of short stories called Tales from the Dad Side, and these are the stories that passed muster with my kids when I was tucking them in the bed. If I start when my daughter was two or three, I would, we read stories, and then I would make up stories, and, some nights it would be like, that one wasn't very good, Daddy. Or other nights it would be, that was great, and I'd have to tell that one over and over and over. So those, it's kind of a compilation of those. And their all-time favorite story was one about Frank Jordan, Evil Snowman. And that's the one that I partnered up with a guy named Rick McGee, who's a wonderful cartoonist and illustrator from, I think, down in Lexington. And Rick illustrated it, and we put it out as a picture book. And I'll actually have that one this weekend at Fright Night, Frank Jordan, Evil Snowman.
Yeah, the cover of that one's SNL great.
For those who are SNL fans, it's like, that sounds a little familiar. Yeah, Fred Gardner, male prostitute. That's where it came from. So
that's great.
Yeah, I love the cover.
Buddy,
I love the cover of that one.
Like, yeah, thank you. A buddy of mine, you heard the title of it. He said, please tell me he introduces himself as Frank Jordan, Evil Snowman. I was like, oh, yeah, he does. Every time. There were sequels every night.
Good.
One night he was doing battle with Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. Another night it was Elsa from Frozen, and on and on and on. But that was by far the favorite.
Uh-oh, you said the magic word for Holly, Frozen. That's like her favorite thing in the world. So we're trouble.
I do love Elsa.
Yeah, children's books are wonderful. We just got into it, Holly and I did, with our press in this past year, and it really is that's a whole other realm. It's been exciting to kind of get up to speed a little bit more and get into the world of children's books, and they are definitely important in this day and age with so many entertainment options and kids getting too glued into electronics. It's nice to see children's books are still kind of thriving out there.
Oh, absolutely. And there's, for me, I've got books that I read on Kindle and ebooks and stuff, and a lot of mine are available. But, we've got thousands of books in this house.
Yeah.
for me, it's got to be a real book. It's got to be a physical book. And, I'll tell you, a really great day. My wife and I took a day off. My kids were back in school. It was probably about a year ago. Of course, we're still under the pandemic. Everybody's got to wear masks and stuff. But we took a day trip. We went to Frankfort, Kentucky. And have you guys been to Poor Richard's in Frankfort, Kentucky?
No, I don't think I have.
Let me tell you about this. Uh-huh. You walk in, we walked in on the ground floor, and it reminded me a lot of this. There's a place called Prairie Lights, which is a bookstore in Iowa City. And it's all new books on the bottom floor. And it's really nice and everything. Be honest, I'm a little disappointed as I'm looking around. Then we get to the back of the store, and there's a set of stairs saying, go up this way. So we go up this way, we flip the light switch, and I swear, it's the most amazing sight you've ever seen. I mean, it's old books, and I mean, stacked floor to ceiling, and this ceiling's at least 12
feet
tall. And I mean, just bookshelf after bookshelf after bookshelf, and they're kind of loosely categorized and stacked and sorted everywhere. I immediately hone in on the shelf that's got, I'm a big fan of Ian Fleming, and I'm a big fan of Leslie Charteris and the Saint books, and they've got six of them sitting right there on the shelf. I grabbed all six of them.
Wow.
I mean, it was, we spent an hour in there just digging around and finding different treasures. It's worth your time, and you'll definitely, if you like books, especially if you like old books, you'll drop some money in there. But it's a cool place.
Yeah, both of
you
do love old books. What's that, Daniel?
Yeah, we're going to have to go check it out.
What do you consider old books?
I've got paperbacks of the James Bond novels going back to the 60s. The editions of The Saint that I've got are probably at least 50, 60 years old. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the oldest possible copy. I like I like the hardcovers if I can get them. I'll settle for the paperbacks if I can't. At this point with the James Bond, I've got all but For Your Eyes Only in at least a 50-year-old edition, and I'm still trying to hone in on that one. I've got most of them now collected on paperbacks as well. Anytime I go into half price books, I always go check the nostalgia section just to see what they've got. I've got
mm-hmm.
first editions of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy books, and I've got an older copy of Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy with all three of them. My father had had one as a kid, and that was the first edition I read, and something happened to it, disappeared over the years, but I found the same edition. I've read that trilogy probably almost as much as Hitchhiker's Guide. That's one of my favorites as well.
Half-price books, you can score because,
yeah.
Man, Steve,
I
love the old Victorian, the goth tales, Poe is my favorite poet, and then I love the Grimm Brothers, and we actually found, it's from the 60s, it
62,
is a
1962.
Yeah, 1962, two-book, hardcover book, set of all the Grimm tales, and it was even in a case that you stuck
in. Slipcase edition.
Yes.
Nice.
They're in immaculate condition. The books, I don't even think, have been read. I mean, there's no dog-eared pages. There's
no
stains or anything.
Yeah,
we got it for $12. I'll never forget it.
$12.
That's amazing. That is fantastic. Have you all ever
are coming home.
Daniel's on
Midnight Vigil for
Midnight Vigil. No, I have not been to that yet.
The Midnight Vigil for Poe. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to that.
Yeah.
I think that would be
cool. Ooh, that'd be fun.
I think the night before his birthday, I think they do a midnight thing at the church where he's buried, and they read from his works and stuff.
I need to go to this.
There was a mysterious figure that would show up during
mm-hmm.
the night and lay a white rose, and nobody knew who he was. There was a signal between the guy at the church and him to know it was actually him, and it was several years ago. They think he passed away. Someone different showed up and left one more rose, and he hasn't been back. But No, there's a lot. There's a lot of cool. Yeah, it's a real neat tradition that they do in Baltimore. So something I'd certainly love to do one day.
Yeah,
well, I'm gonna
definitely
go check this out. I would love to do that. Yeah. No, Daniel. Yeah. Daniel has some books that are like 100 over 100 years old. Yeah. He gave Stephen one.
Yeah.
For
when
a
Daniel's
birthday.
Daniel's browsing for literature, his idea of old is like a first
Victorian.
Edition Sumerian tablets. something like a
Moses
first edition Sumerian tablet.
Flabs, yeah.
Papyrus. It's got to be on papyrus even. So, but no, Daniel does have some amazing books in the 1800s
yeah.
and stuff. And he gave
that's
me one once.
Amazing.
It's amazing
a
stuff.
Lot of my
yeah.
book collection starts at 1910 mm-hmm. and works its way back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's
what is
awesome.
Your oldest book, Daniel?
My oldest one that I've got is probably 1823 or something like that.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That's neat.
And then I've got a bunch of them from the middle 1800s to the late 1800s. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, but my oldest one I think is about 1823.
That is cool.
It's awesome.
And then I just a buddy of mine that's into sound and light and stuff like that. He's developed his own set of speakers that's going to revolutionize the speaker world. I just gave him one on light that was done in 1860s. So.
Wow.
Well, that is awesome. That is
that's
awesome.
Cool.
This is neat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Daniel, when it comes cool. to the Victorian age, yeah, Daniel's got his,
yeah.
got his, that's his wheelhouse for sure. He's got his handle on it. But,
Daniel, reach out to me because I've got a book that,
the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Now, what are you saying, John?
I was going to say, reach out to me on Facebook after we're done here. There's a book I want to send you. I've got one of the interesting things I came across when I was working on my first book about Louisville, which is called Bluegrass Brawlers, was the stories about wrestling from the 1880s. The first
nice.
Actual match that I recorded that I wrote about was a man versus woman match that took place at an opera house in Louisville. It was a female circus wrestler named Ida Alb who went to the Courier
yes.
Journal and said, here's $250. For any man or woman in my weight class to come down and wrestle me so we can prove that what we're doing is not fake.
Nice.
But I tried to find more information on her. There's very, very little information on her. She actually passed away a couple of years later from a heroin overdose. That's the only thing I could prefer that other than the fact that she pulled the same gimmick in other towns and stuff. And it was obviously fake, but I ended up, you know, there's very little information about the wrestlers from that age, but I ended up writing a short story book called Grappling by Gaslight. And it was stories inspired by these 1880s wrestlers. And there's one based on the lady circus wrestler. There's one based on a couple of barnstormers and some con men. One of them would go into town and establish himself as the local strongman and issue an open challenge. And then his buddy would come in from out of town. And it was all about making money off the gamblers and stuff and fixing the fight.
Right.
And there's a couple other tales. So there's one that's based on, believe it or not, there was an African-American wrestler in the 1880s. His wrestling name was Black Sam. His real name was Vero Small. He was a former slave from South Carolina, made his way to New York, where some of the biggest
wow.
wrestling fans up there at the time were Thomas Edison, P.T. Barnum, and later on Teddy Roosevelt would hit the bars and watch the wrestling matches. But he actually wrestled professionally, was shot one night by someone after a match, after somebody lost some money and survived and live to wrestle again. But I got this. It's historical fiction. Dana, I'd love to send you a copy. Shoot me a message. I'll be happy to get one in the mail to you. I think you get a kick
cool.
out of it. These stories are just so cool. And it's I've got a buddy named Tim Corvin who wrote a book about wrestling in the 1880s and 1890s, and he tells stories about Farmer Burns and Clarence Whistler and William Muldoon. I mean, just these, you know. Yeah, the early pioneers. pro wrestling kind of got popular the same way baseball did. You know, during the Civil War, when they were camped out and everything, if they had the space, they would play baseball. If they didn't have enough room, they would do wrestling. And they took that love of wrestling back home with them. You know, it kind of evolved as a sport, and then it evolved as more of a show as the circuses started putting on wrestling and everything, and ultimately grew into what we know today. But yeah, some of those stories are just fascinating about Muldoon and Whistler. Muldoon was considered to be the greatest wrestler of his time and became the first New York State Athletic Commissioner. But he and Whistler wrestled three different times to a draw each time, and each match lasted about 9 hours. Which is insane.
Wow.
People
wow.
Watch guys wrestle for 9 hours. Whistler had a gimmick. He was known for he would drink a glass of champagne and then eat the glass, which unfortunately is also how he died. He did it wrong one night, cut his stomach open. But I mean, just incredible stories about these early pioneers. It's really just a fascinating era to explore. And I've done everything. I've contacted the circus museums and stuff, and trying to find out more about this lady wrestler, Ida Alb, and there's just so far there's nothing, but you never know. I mean, something just might turn up on a whim. Actually, interesting story. After another wrestler that caught my eye when I was working on my first book was the Black Panther, Jim Mitchell. And I'd written some different things on him and done different bits of research and everything, trying to find out. And then one day out of the blue, I get an email from a guy. He says, "Here's my buddy Dave's number. Call him. He's in Toledo, Ohio." And I get in touch with this guy. He had purchased Jim Mitchell's estate, his house, in the early 90s as a flip. He heard two old ladies talking about it at breakfast and went to the bank, made an offer for $12,000, bought the house to flip it. He starts going through it. He's not a wrestling fan or anything like that. Has no idea whose house it is. And he starts finding posters, programs, photos. Mitchell was a smoking pipe collector and had literally a collection of thousands of pipes from around the world. He found all the pipes. Just all these personal pipes.
Wow.
He had saved them for more than 20 years, you know, by the time I got to him and met up with him. And I helped him catalog everything. We sold a lot of stuff on eBay. I bought a few things. A number of things that I had have been donated to the Fraser History Museum here in Louisville, and hopefully it'll be on display. But like I say, I mean, just out of the blue, you know, my putting that post up there, this stuff was found and surfaced, and the whole pipe collection is still up there. He's still got the pipe collection, and waiting for somebody to come along and give him a price on it, which in the magazines back in the days, it was appraised at $27,000, you know, and when I showed them to the smoking aficionados, they're like, "Oh, they're just a bunch of dusty old pipes. Nobody wants those." So it's kind of a frustrating
situation. Not true.
Yeah, look
at there you go. Daniel, that would be great to have on display in your trolley. Daniel runs a Victorian cigar trolley.
It would be phenomenal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It all depends on what the pipes are, because there's certain ones that are super valuable, and then there's other ones that, you know, you can buy them for pennies.
Yeah. And he's got a lot of them that are for pennies, but there are some that are hand-carved, and, I mean, just a very ornate. I've only had a chance to look at it for maybe 15 minutes and take some photos, but which I think I've got the photos up on my website, but no, it's an interesting piece of history, something that I hope, you know, still hopeful I can get him to let him loose at a certain price and get it. I don't want him for myself. I want to get him out there someplace where people can see him.
Right.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah, go.
Have you ever heard of the Old Bookstore?
What bookstore, Daniel? Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Elder's Bookstore?
I have not, no.
It's a bookstore in Nashville that they deal in antique and rare books.
I'll have to check that out.
They've got everything from like high school and college annuals to maps of, you know, war maps and everything from the Civil War to everything else. You know, I buy a lot of my old books from Mr. Elder.
I will definitely have to check that out. I always hit McKay's when I'm down there in Nashville, the big used book and movie warehouse and everything is just on the east side. But I will definitely make a point to check that out next time I'm down there.
Elders is out on Whitebridge Road now, which is on the west side of Nashville.
Gotcha.
That's cool.
It's down the street from Nashville State Technical Institute and Bell Mead and all that, the rich section of the old money where the Bell Mead Mansion and all that stuff is out in that area too. So, but you were talking about not being able to get very much on the lady wrestler that you're trying to find out about. If there was anything, any books written on her, he may know about it or have more availability to find out about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Mm.
Because his father is the one that bought my great uncle's bookstore that was down next to the Ryman Auditorium and incorporated it into his bookstore when my great uncle retired from the bookstore and everything.
Yeah.
And he still got a picture down there of the bookstore that I want that he hasn't turned loose to me yet.
Oh, wow. So, well, maybe they'll open up some leads, but I was thinking I just made a brief comment on it, but maybe that's an area where John can explore some future screenplay projects, because that sounds like a cool character for a movie. female wrestler.
Yeah.
That sounds
awesome.
I'd have
to pump
awesome.
Some iron, but I'd play her. I don't care. I'd do it. I'm 6'1" and a whole lot of holly, so you know there.
she could pull it off. Yeah, Holly could be a wrestling character easily, but.
my older grandkids, they get so tickled. They were here. What was that? Earlier this year or last year? We
WrestleMania.
Watched the big wrestling.
WrestleMania.
We watched WrestleMania. Yeah. And they had a ball, and they was like, Mammy could do it, because they call me Mammy. Mammy could wrestle. She'd beat him up. She'd get that guy. Mammy, get him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they said my name would be The Mammy. That's my wrestling name, The Mammy.
Yeah, The Mammy. Yeah, she could. And
you need to show them the footage of Mae Young when she was taking bumps in her 80s.
They would love that. I will have to show them that. They would get a kick out of that because they love wrestling.
Yeah. There was the night that Bubba Ray Dudley actually did the powerbomb and put her through a table, and she told him, "Don't hold back on me." He's like, "No," and he's doing everything he can to protect this 80-something-year-old woman. They get to the back. She comes up to him, smacks him in the face, goes, "You call that a powerbomb?"
That's awesome.
Oh, that is awesome.
Oh,
they
already
like
love her.
Yeah.
Do you remember Dundee?
Bill Dundee?
The great Dundee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. He's still going. I think he finally let his hair go. He's got white hair now. He finally quit dying it. But yeah, he's still getting in the ring. I think he's about 75 now. But I've met him. He's very, very funny guy. He actually wrote a really great book himself with Mark James telling his story. And
And Dutch Mantell and
a bunch of
from around, you know, Jerry Lawler and stuff Nashville area.
Dutch Mantell put out two books of stories as well. Dutch's books are fantastic. He's got a great one. I think it's in his second book, which I won't spoil it because it's worth buying the book for. Basically, the story of how Ricky Morton got his second or third or fourth divorce. I don't know which one. That's a good story. And he's also got a good one in his first book about a night he and Jeff Jarrett wrestled at the Kentucky Center for the Arts as part of a musical presentation. This is, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but a composer from the music school, I want to say it, I think he was at Iowa State University, and it was a composition for mixed percussion and two wrestlers. and it's this very odd
okay.
percussion. And it starts off, this guy's conducting, it's all percussion on stage, and it's just, you know, and everything. And as they're performing, the platform, like the orchestra pit, rises up in Kentucky Center, and you got all these blue hairs and stuff, you know, the typical orchestra crowd, and there's Jeff Jarrett, Dutch Mantel, and there's a referee in a wrestling ring. And they wrestled for about, I think they wrestled for 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And Dutch tells the whole story about it in his first book. It's actually on YouTube. You can find it. I would say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just search Dutch Mantel, Jeff Jarrett, Kentucky Center for the Arts. It was aired on PBS or something. And it's funny
up.
Because the crowd gets into it as it goes along. And, you know,
talks
about it, like, you have no idea how difficult it is to keep wrestling for 10 minutes, you know, with percussion going on and you're in an orchestra. It just feels like forever.
Oh, my God. That's
yeah,
so funny.
It's a wild, wild thing to watch. One of the most interesting matches certainly I've ever seen.
Have you done one yet on the disasters of wrestling?
Well, there's been disasters in quite a few of my books. I'll say that.
like Tojo Yamamoto, Rick Rude, you know Macho Man dying, you know.
Right.
All,
yeah.
All
say Chris Candido was certainly a tragic. So he was only 37 years old. He'd actually gotten himself clean and sober. Was getting his life back together. Had a fluke accident in the ring. I mean, it was just a regular old, just taking a bump and messed up his leg. Had to have emergency surgery and, didn't listen to the doctors. It was never warned, don't get on a plane for about a week. He got on a plane, he had a blood clot traveled up to his brain, and a couple of days later he was dead, you know. Just heartbreaking.
And then,
I mean, he was,
and then,
he would be 49 years old now and probably working backstage somewhere or maybe even still wrestling. Just one of the greatest minds, and nobody had more love for the business. And you'd be hard pressed to find anybody who has a negative thing to say about the guy. Everybody loved him. So,
well, like Owen Hart, you know that.
Yeah, yeah. So Owen Hart wrote a book about him that's just absolutely gut wrenching to read too. And I'm glad to see she's actually partnered up with this new All Elite Wrestling. They're going to start producing some Owen Hart action figures and things like that, and paying tribute to him properly and everything. So. Yeah, just such a sad story. And there's way too many of them. Well, Ida Alp, I mean, my goodness, she died of a heroin overdose. And the obituary that I found said, you know, her wrestling name was Ida Alp, but nobody knows what her real name was. Nobody knows if she has any family. I mean, she just died alone in a train car, you know, back in 1882.
Oh,
with
gosh.
Her arm. So, yeah. So the business, it's a cruel business. You know, not a week goes by that, you know, sometimes it feels like that a week goes by before somebody doesn't pass away. There's the girl used to, Shannon Spruill, wrestled with us, Daphne, who committed suicide after going live and saying goodbye to everybody on Instagram a couple weeks ago. The brain damage and the depression and everything from concussions and, you know, the toll it took on her mind and on her body from the ring. And, yeah, it's heartbreaking, you know. We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of losing Tracy Smothers. He when we first started, you know, I'd been kind of working on his book for a little bit for 6 months, and when we really sat down to start finishing it up, he was diagnosed with cancer and spent about 4 months doing chemo. There were nights he would spend 2 hours on the phone with me because he was hyped up on the medicine they gave him while he was taking chemo, and I'm listening to him tell stories and talking to the nurse. Hey, bring me some more peanut butter. Need some more peanut butter. And then there are other nights he could barely talk, could barely move, was just completely worn out. And he managed to beat it the first time. And we got the book out right out of the time the world went into lockdown with COVID. And, last time I ever got to see him in person was actually right before that. We met up to kind of go through the book. And I actually had him sign a bunch of stickers so that I could have an autographed edition rather than have him travel. It just wouldn't have been safe, you know, with his body so weakened and everything.
Right.
But he was fine, and he was getting ready to start going back out and doing things and stuff late summer. And the cancer came back, and it was just his heart that finally gave out. His body, just the wear and tear on his body over the years. And he's just so missed. There were so many people that, you know, he was a second father to, and You know, just one of the kindest hearts and kindest souls you'd ever meet. And anybody who would stop and listen, you know, he would give them advice. And you know, one of the things I remember most about him was, you know, he wrestled a lot for a promotion here in New Albany back when I was first starting to really write about pro wrestling, and he was the top heel. And his body then was even broken down. He couldn't wrestle like he used to, but I mean, he would come out for 20 minutes and you would be entertained the whole time, and it'd be him running his mouth. And, you know, it was like, as soon as I take off my robe, the divorce rate in this town's going to triple. You know, challenging the guy to a dance contest and everything, all this kind of stall, and doing the Gorgeous George, hey, don't pull my hair, don't touch my hair and everything. The one thing I remember is sitting near the curtain where the backstage area was, and somebody went through really quickly. He's sitting in a chair right there at the curtain. He watched every single match. Every kid that was on that show, he watched their matches. And if they came up to him and said, hey, how was my match? He would be positive with them. You know, there's a lot of guys like, oh, I don't care. Tracy was positive with everybody. He was encouraging. And if they, you know, he could tell they were attentive and listening and everything. I mean, he'd follow up with them. He'd send them messages and say, hey, how you doing? If he saw they were injured, he'd reach out to them, keep your chin up. You know, you'll get back at it and everything. I mean, just he and Madman Pondo, Pondo's another guy who's just got all the heart in the world and has given way, way more to the business than the business has ever given them back. And, you know, just the people they've taken under their wing, the people they've helped out, the careers they've helped to launch and the advice they've given, just both two amazing guys. And I'm just very, very fortunate to have known them. And yeah, like I said, I miss Tracy every day, and, you know, glad Pondo's still around, you know, and looking forward to hanging out with him this weekend. Actually, he's going to be in his element. I mean, it's a horror show this weekend. So, you know, he'll probably be at the table for 10 minutes and he'll be taking photos with everybody from all movies.
yeah, no kidding. But well, that's where you come in, you know. I mean, you're the one, you know, recording these stories, putting them down and protecting their legacies. And so that's got to be a pretty good feeling on your end.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I love what I do. You know, I can't, you know, there's a couple other folks I'm talking to, and actually somebody talked to you on the phone not too long ago. So you write books? Yeah. Would you be interested in writing mine? Like, heck yeah, I would be interested in writing yours. So just, you know, one of those things, I can't believe what I get to do and the people I get to talk to. And yeah, one of my favorite memories when I was working with Dr. D on his book, he wanted Bret Hart to write the foreword for the book, and we were able to get a hold of Bret, and David talked to him, and then I pick my kids up from school, and I'm driving them home, and I get a phone call, you know, and put it on speakerphone, and I'm sitting here talking to Bret Hitman Hart on the phone.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Amazing. My kids are probably 7 or 8 at the time, 8 or 9. And I got the phone. It's like, guys, you know who that was? Like, no, that's Bret Hart. And I'm like, Bret, I'm like, ugh. You guys know on the opening credits to Malcolm in the Middle, the wrestler in the pink trunks. Oh, really? Like, yeah, that's him.
That's him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, you know, awesome.
Oh, Bret Hart he's awesome, man.
And, you know, getting to talk with, you know, Mark Henry and I got to know each other. He wrote the foreword for the Black Panther, Jim Mitchell's book. I don't know if you guys have watched the Glow series on Netflix. I've gotten to know some of the original Glow girls who are just wonderful ladies and have great stories.
Neat.
Yeah, even some of the folks you don't necessarily know. I met a guy a couple years ago named Rock Riddle, who was kind of big in the California scene and everything, and then he got himself on television, and he's walking around the Hall of Fame, and I'm like, Rock Riddle, I don't know the name. I Google it, I look at his Wikipedia, and something immediately catches my eye. He comes by my table, and it's like, my name is John Cosper. It's like, I understand you knew Chuck Barris. And he proceeds to tell me about Chuck Barris and about all the appearances he made on the Gong Show.
Wow.
All these other variety shows. And actually, a really cool thing, around about last February, I'm on YouTube, and I'm a big fan of Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, and they've been talking about Fernwood Tonight with Martin Mull and Fred Willard. So I turn on – I find an episode. The episode's called The Wrestler, so I turn it on. Rock Riddle's playing The Wrestler. I take a screenshot. I said, that's you, isn't it? He's like, yep, that's me. you know. That guy's I would encourage people too. If you're a wrestling fan, go to the Hall of Fame in Waterloo. It's George Tragos Luthez Hall of Fame. They do it every July. or go to Cauliflower Alley in Vegas and just go and just be – it's better than a fan convention because, you know, you're not just walking around and they're all sitting at tables waiting for you to come give them money. They're hanging out. You know, they're hanging out. They're talking. And if you sit down and you want to listen, they'll tell you stories all day. And that's – to me, that's the best, is just sitting and soaking it in and just listening to what they have to say, you know. And I'm working with Carrie McDaniel, Wahoo McDaniel's widow, on a book about his life. And, you know, got to go up and talk to Baron von Raschke when I was at the hall and hear him talk about it. And talk to Sam Houston on the phone. And Jim Cornette, obviously, has been a good friend of mine for a long time, and getting to hear Jim's stories about him. And like I said, I just, you know, I shake my head some days, like, I can't believe what I do, you know, and the opportunities that I get to have, and not only to, you know, to be around these people and to hear their stories, but to help to preserve those stories and to get them on paper so that other people can hear them. It's a great feeling, and it's just, you know, I love it.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And we're coming up at about 9.5 minutes left in the show, so I do want to make sure we get a couple important things in here, one of which is you are appearing this weekend at Fright Night Film Festival, and you mentioned that you've been hitting some other spots as well. What do you have coming up as far as live appearances that our audience might be able to come support you at?
Say, Fright Night's the only thing I've got on my calendar right now. It's looking like a busy school year. My son's doing School of Rock, and my daughter's doing ice hockey, which I'm very excited about.
Nice. But
I'll be at Fright Night this weekend. I'll have wrestling books. If there are Tracy Smothers fans out there, I've got just a handful of signed editions left. And once they're gone, they're gone. I'll have some at the show this weekend. My wrestling website is eatsleepwrestle.com. I've got signed editions of Princess Victoria's book, Madman Pondo's book. I've got editions signed by Johnny Candido, myself, of Chris Candido's book. And I've got my other the Louisville books are both up there. Black Panther, Jim Mitchell, Elvira Snodgrass, Grappling by Gaslight, some of the other titles we talked about. Then my fiction site is johncosper.com. I've got Dead Park Plaza for sale right now, the new edition of The Big Bad Goodnight. My short story collection, my sci-fi short story collection, is called Robot Girlfriend. There's about a half dozen stories in that have all been turned into short films. Including a couple of them. Herschel Zahn did one on the story Tolerance that won a couple awards at Fright Night. And
nice.
And then Sydney Maples is adapting
Herschel.
Two of them now.
Telemarketer. Yeah.
And she's a telemarketer, and she did another one. I'll be honest with you, I think the story is just kind of okay, but she took this little story of mine about and you guys would love this one because it's about an author who's, you know, writing a story about this woman. This woman gets horribly murdered, and the character's ghost comes to life in his apartment and comes after him. And she turned it into a short film called Out of My Mind. That is just, it's just absolutely awesome. And rightfully so. She won a couple of awards with that one as well. So, I've got several things up there. I've got there's a sci-fi novel too that called Die, Alan, Die, which is kind of an interdimensional, multidimensional, alternate universe type thing. The basic premise of it is there's a guy who, anytime a girl breaks up with him, he tells her, you know, in another dimension, you and I end up happily ever after. And then one day, girl breaks up with him, he drops the line on her, and the same girl from another dimension shows up, and she's there to kill him. So,
surprise! Plot twist.
You know, I do have at least I used to have a thing on my writing website. You know, if you're into, you know, dystopian, you know, stories, you know, with teen angst and this and that, I'm not your guy. I like laser guns. I like spaceships. I like aliens. I like craziness and just wherever the imagination takes me. And you know, so, you know, please feel free to come check it out. Shoot me an email if you're looking for, you know, what do you recommend? Or and I'll definitely be at Fright Night this weekend. I'll have Dead Park Plaza, which is, again, the office horror compilation, and Big Bad Goodnight, which is the noir fairy tales, and I'll have all the wrestling books with me as well. And it's something we haven't mentioned. One of the film series I did was start a zombie puppet by the name of Clive the Zombie. And I'll have Clive with me this weekend for photo ops if anybody wants to stop by and see Clive the Zombie. And if you want to see him in action, several of his movies are up on junkcosper.com. You can go check him out.
Yeah, I saw that. And, you got quite a lot to browse, like I said. So, yeah, definitely, folks, check out
those
sites.
Was this a Clive Barker-inspired puppet?
No. I actually found him. The story behind this is I – I'd been making short films for a couple of years. I had one kid. We had another one on the way, and I'm like, I can't be spending my weekends running around with actors and stuff, you know, when I've got a family to raise. So I wanted to make some more movies. I got in touch with a friend of mine. He used to be with a company called, I think they're called Puppets Inc. now, but they make these wonderful, really well-constructed puppets. And I'm on eBay browsing for some other ones, and I find there's a guy, Eddie Horn is his name. He's a stand-up comic and a puppet builder up in Chicago, and he's got a puppet, and Clive the Zombie was how he was advertised, and he looked like he fit in with the other puppets that I had, and he's this ghastly, grisly-looking zombie puppet. The auction closed without any bids on it or anything like that, but the whole time I'm sitting in the back of my mind going, what would I do with a zombie puppet? What kind of stories could I tell? And after writing 3 or 4 scripts, I went back, I contacted Eddie, we made a deal, I bought Clive, and made about 6 or 7 short films with him, plus a bunch of little one-off little, you know, bad zombie jokes, you know. What does a zombie eat for breakfast? Grains. What is the one I got some hate mail on was, what does the dyslexic zombie eat? Brian. So.
That's good. That's good.
Some things like that. Cindy Mabel.
I'll warn my cousin now.
I think there's some photos of Cindy and Clive up on the website. And Cindy made a cameo as his girlfriend. So, but no, she loved Clive. But yeah, I'll have Clive. Clive will be at the show with me this weekend. So if anybody wants to just stop by and get a photo with Clive, you're more than welcome to do so.
That's awesome. I'm familiar with Cindy Maple's work, and also, of course, Herschel Zond. Yeah, he's near and dear to us. Yeah, you got some good folks you're working with on those, for sure.
Talk about a Renaissance. Very talented. We can talk about Herschel all night, man. He's phenomenal.
No, I know.
He is.
Oh, yeah.
He is.
He's great. And he's also
I
love him because he
just lost his little kitty. He had a little kitty for 13 days.
Yeah.
And it had a parasite, they found out. And poor Hirsch, he stayed up with him like all night, their night. And the little guy had an IV going and everything. And he lost his little kitty. Sad. Little Oliver.
Yeah, Herschel's a great guy. And we love him. Yeah, and all his crew around him, David Waite and all those guys. Yeah, all around
Sean
him.
Sean Byrne Saunders. I talked to Sean earlier.
Jason. Jason, all of them.
Jason William Allen. We love Jay.
Yeah. You're fun. And I think he's
David
actually
Waite
on next week. Yeah, I think Jason's
David
on next week,
most,
I believe.
He's one of the most underrated actors, I think, in the Louisville, Southern Indiana, Kentuckiana area. I mean,
I worked
with him on a state. Worked with David on a stage play a couple years ago, and just, I mean, he's one of those guys, he had total liberty. What if I did this? Like, oh my gosh, it's so much funnier than what I wrote. Go for it. Just
right.
Phenomenally talented guy. Yeah, very funny.
Yeah,
gave him a block to where he could actually, because he hasn't done stand-up in years, you know, with COVID and everything else going on, and he loves stand-up. That's where he's hard, you know. Where you start. He loves stand-up. And I'm like, David, hey, if I give you a platform, you want to do it? And he's like, yeah, let me think up. Yeah, I'll do it. So he did a little skit before, before our award ceremony. Yeah, so, just get his feet wet again.
Yeah.
I love David.
Yeah. Mm.
Coming up on a couple minutes left in the show. So, John, tell the audience, you've given we definitely have gotten to cover your websites, but what social media or other links would you like folks to connect with you at?
Well, folks can find me on Facebook. You can search for John Cosper, the John Cosper author, or Eat, Sleep, Wrestle. You can find me on Twitter at John Cosper. On Instagram, I am at John Cosper author. And then my websites are johncosper.com and eatsleepwrestle.com. And you can get links to all my social media from those websites as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, John. It has been an absolute pleasure, and we'll definitely have you back. We love having guests back, so this won't be the last time. And obviously, your prolific nature, you'll have plenty to talk about for too long.
Yes.
But thank you for joining us tonight. Yeah, thanks for joining us tonight.
It's been
wonderful.
Yeah, it's great to meet you.
All right, nice to meet you guys as well.
You take care, John, and have a great night, and we'll be definitely catching up with you soon.
Sounds great. Talk to you guys later.
All right, bye-bye. Be careful.
Bye.
And, folks, yeah, next Wednesday's Star Chamber Show, 9 p.m. Eastern. We'll have another great creative guest. Yeah, we had such a good time with John Cosper tonight, and definitely go check out his site at johncosper.com or his wrestling site, Eat, Sleep, Wrestle. So on to you, Holly and Daniel, and take us out.
Join us next week, Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we hope you have a wonderful, productive weekend. We are getting to start my favorite month of the year, which is October. Spooky season has begun. Woohoo! See you next week. On to Daniel.
I hope that you learned something tonight. I know that I learned a lot about wrestling that I didn't know, even though I've been involved in it and around it most of my life. You know, there's always something that you'll learn by talking to other people. And John is a great example of that. He has had multitudes of different stories that he was able to capture and will be able to capture. And I hope that you are able to capture your story too. Until we talk next week, this is Daniel Dark signing out.